Thanks, everybody, and thanks for inviting me to talk today to you about the effects of drought and genotype by environment interaction. I mean, and why we are talking about drought. I mean, there is no reason we don't need to justify why we need to be talking about drought. And while we do selections, as Ambika was showing, that we are doing selections to improve, you know, the tolerance or the resistance of the different species and lines to drought, we want to study what is the impact at the overall population level, you know, in these different species with drought. So turf grass is probably the highest area covered in the country. And that's because you guys, that the ones you work in turf, you have different species to cover almost the whole country, different species. So that's very true. However, drought, if we center in the warm season grasses and in the transition zone, we can see the drought is the part the drought is impacting the most. And even worse, actually, it's predicted that it's going to be even worse in the future. Okay? So thinking about that, we have also additional challenges. And for example, the municipal enforcement, you know, water restrictions. And this is one case from Florida, actually, that you have to reduce the amount of water that you're putting in your lawn. And that, obviously, we know that the grasses get affected, or the turf get affected when you decrease the amount of water that you are using. Now, there's different species and different genotypes within these species. And within among these species, we know also that we have different responses to the drought stresses of this water stress. And on the other hand, we know there is a lot of opportunities. For example, this survey that was carried in 2012 or before 2012, you know, indicates that people is willing to pay more for actually for the water low water use turf grasses, you know, in comparison with fertility or in comparison with a frequency of mowing, for example. However, what we don't know is what is going to happen at the breeding level, at the population level. I mean, we are selecting a few lines that's going to be, you know, drought tolerant, but in breeding, it's a game of numbers at the end of the day. So we don't play with just a few lines. So we play with, or we test very large amount of, you know, experimental lines to make selections. So on the overall level, what is happening, what is going to happen with the genetic parameters? This is going to be easier, harder to make selections regarding drought tolerance in these different species. And how the GVI is going to change. So one of the hypotheses in this sense is that if we have water stress, the difference among genotypes is going to be increased. The difference of the genotypes is going to increase, and thus the genetic variances are going to increase. And that will be kind of the case. So we see it's just this as a distribution. For example, this is from, you know, just simulated data. We can see how the distribution in this population increased in that population. So what will be the case? This will be the case, for example, if you have characteristic or genes in these populations that you are working with, that you have individuals that carry those genes are, you know, drought tolerance. So whenever they are under these circumstances, there's going to be a separations in the tolerance of the different lines, and then the genetic variability is going to increase. Okay? So the second scenario will be that the water stress could decrease the difference among genotypes, and then it's going to decrease the genetic variability, okay? And in this case will be, for example, if there is no many genes affecting, controlling drought tolerance in some of these species, so when they're under drought, actually all the individuals decrease, and some of them actually are going to die, are not going to be able to support the drought, and then the genetic variability for these species is going to decrease, okay? So I just want to jump into the results right away, and it's a very straightforward message I want to put here. And all the analysis that we did, this is probably we analyzed more than half a million data points, more or less. In this case, I'm presenting just a subset about Bermuda grass and San Agustin grass, and just a couple of years, 2011 and 2012. Okay? So we look at the genotype by environment interaction of this difference. So what we have in the Y, in the x-axis here, are different couples of environments or locations. So we have, for example, RA standing for for Raleigh, FL for Florida, CS for College Station, DA for Dallas, SW for Stillwater. These are the same sites that Ambika just presented in the talk before, okay? And in the y-axis, we have the genotype by environment correlation. So the higher the correlation, that means that the ranking across different locations is better, so there's no change in the rankings. And what we see in this figure, actually, is that in every case, when we have the individuals under drought, there is a decrease in the genetic correlation, okay? So this is in the case of Bermuda grass. When we look in the case of San Agustin grass, and exactly the same, you know, variables in the y-axis and the x-axis, we see that in most of the cases, the same trend is true. Okay, we are looking here again. We are looking around 20,000 data points per data set that we're looking at here. Okay, so I'm using a few cases that you see actually the interaction or the correlation with the still water actually increases when you are under drought. And I'm going to leave those out. I'm going to try to explain those at the end of the talk. Now, if we think that the way that we are calculating these correlations actually is just a traditional correlation, so you have a covariance in the top and you have two variants on the bottom. Okay, so we can ask the question, what is it changing? Is it changing the variance components of each of these locations? In reality, the only thing that is changing is the correlation or the covariances among these different locations. In other words, to say the way these individuals are interacting across these different locations. Okay, so we can look at the genetic variance, which is the bottom part of the denominator on our equation. And in reality, we don't see any pattern. We don't see any pattern in the genetic variances in the case of Bermuda grass. We don't see any pattern in the genetic variances in the case of San Agustin grass. Now, if we look at the genetic correlation, and this graph is a little bit more complex than before, so we have, this is the site that's being correlated with this other site in color. So for example, the first column is the correlation of Raleigh with Florida in red. Then we have Raleigh with College Station in green, and so on and so forth. So I don't want you to look at the specific details of this figure, but I want you to notice actually that where we are under drought, you know, the covariance actually is much larger than when we are under normal conditions, it's much larger than when we are under drought. So this is telling us that actually the genetic variances in each of these locations is not changing, but what is changing actually is how these genotypes interact. Now, this data set is a subset of data set of what I was telling you about, so we excluded here a couple of sites because they were not under drought in these studies. Okay, for example, I think Griffin and Tifton, I think. So this is the case of Bermuda grass, and you know exactly the same case for San Agustin grass. So, and again, you know, just one difference in the case of Stillwater, actually, that we see an increase in the correlation from normal conditions to drought condition. And I was discussing with Kevin and why could be this the case for San Agustin grass. And you know, I'm not a turf person, so I'm just helping here with all this analysis. But we were discussing about that in the case of Stillwater is one of the driest, you know, the places that you have more drought, actually. So when you have drought in the other sites, actually, kind of you are getting more equivalent to that site. And on the other hand, in the case of San Agustin grass, you have all the cold, it's not very cold tolerance. So actually, that's also another factor to put in the equation in the case of this species. So what is the impact for breeders? So I'm just showing you here five genotypes, you know, 93 to 139, and under normal conditions, and this is the genetic ranking, okay, so obviously lower ranking is better because it's being the top of the ranking, and these are the top individuals under normal conditions. And when actually you look at under drought conditions, some of them change dramatically. So the conclusion of this study is basically telling us that as we get drought, and drought gets more actually stressed, get more increased drought in these sites, our selections are going to be working, are going to be, you know, performing better under only under local conditions and not under, you know, very wide conditions like obviously a breeder wants to. Okay, so you guys are selecting, hopefully to select individuals that are going to be performing across the whole warm season area, for example. But these studies are telling us that either you are going to have to increase the number of individuals that you are testing, because when you are under drought, there is going to be only a few of them that are going to be able to do that, while some of them are just going to start jumping. So in this case, you know, it's almost 60% of them. I'm just looking at very tiny fraction of the data, because we have around, I don't know, hundreds of individuals here, okay? But it's just to show you an example, okay? So with that, I would like to conclude that, you know, the drought effects on GVI interactions, it affects the interaction significantly. You guys, I mean, as breeders, you're going to have to increase the number of lines that you're going to have to test in order to find individuals that are performed well across all the areas that you're working with. And basically, the selections that you're working, as you have more drought, actually, the individual environments are going to be playing a larger role. So, for example, if you have a sand and a clay, and you have very good water conditions, the difference are not going to be very large, of course. But as you get drought, the natural conditions of the environments are going to start affecting more the genotypes that you are working with. And in those cases, and only in those cases, you're going to be able to see actually that your genotypes are going to start falling apart across the different environments. So we find most of the evidence for the hypothesis too. So the drought decreases the genetic signal between the sites. However, this trend is species specific, as I was just telling you. We have a lot more data, and actually one of my students is going to be working with that now, and is going to try to disentangle this with more than 500,000 data points that we have. We're just using around 40,000 in this case, but I did it in other species and the same trend was true. So, but we want to still do it with all the data set and to show in every single case what is happening. So with that, I would like to thank, you guys that collect all the data for, and I was just part of this by analyzing this and playing with the data. I was happy to do it. So thank you. I'll take any questions if you have. Yes?
Can you describe the genetic ranking, how that's calculated?
So the genetic ranking, and good question because I didn't spend any time on that. So we are doing a mixed model, and it's a very complex equation. So in this case, when we are testing 7 sites and, for example, 100, 200 measurements, we use a single error variance for each of the measurements here. So, but it's a mixed model that we fit in HREM with all the data points simultaneously. Yes? Yes, I mean, that's something that I want my student to be working on now. One of the things that you could do with this type of data, I mean, hopefully you will have more sites and less measurements within site, because, I mean, you guys measure this very, intensively every month in some cases. So you have a lot of data coming from one site. But we did other studies and to show that, that month to month there is not much variation in reality. Now, you really want more sites, and then you can do some cluster analysis to actually show what are the different sites that cluster together, and then you could develop lines for those specific environments. And somehow kind of have, you can either have 2 breeding programs, or you can have 1 breeding program with 2 different targets.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you.